Well, today I have selected a topic, an understanding of a spiritualized society. You see, I have lived in Auroville quite many years in the beginning when Auroville had started in 1968. And the mother had given us the ideal of human unity. All of us know that. But then this human unity, is it just a political unity? Or what would be its basis? And the basis would be a spiritualized society. And that's what made me to think that how are we going to transit to this spiritualized society? Are there any symptoms, or is it just an attempt that may not really realize itself? So I started thinking in these lines, and I thought maybe let's try to analyze what is the process that is taking place at present to tell us that this spiritualized society is a possibility and that Auroville is going to be a reality.
Also das Thema für heute Abend ist das Verständnis einer spiritualisierten Gesellschaft. Ananda hat seit Kind Auroville, einige Jahre in Auroville gelebt. Mutter hat Auroville als Ideal der alten Menschheit vorgegeben. Und da stellt sich die Frage, ist es eine politische Einheit oder ist es eigentlich die Basis einer spiritualisierten Gesellschaft? Das ist der Übergang. Wie geht man von der Gesellschaft, die spiritualisierte Gesellschaft über? Welche Symptome gibt es dafür? Oder ist es nur ein Versuch, der irgendwie zum Scheitern verdammt ist? Und im heutigen Abend möchte man den Versuch unternehmen, den Prozess eben zu analysieren und aufzuzeigen, dass Auroville tatsächlich sein wird.
So today I would be concentrating more on this, trying to find out what are the present symptoms that we see in the West, in the East, in any country, that would really give us a kind of an encouragement to say yes, things are happening. Otherwise, if we see the world as it is, just on the surface level, it is not very encouraging. So we have to go a little deeper and see, are there things happening towards the spiritualized society which Sri Aurobindo envisions?
Wir heute betrachten heute also, was sind die Symptome? Wir versuchen in unserer Gesellschaft diese Symptome zu entdecken und daraus zu schöpfen und zu sehen, dass die Dinge tatsächlich geschehen. Auf der Oberfläche sind die Dinge, die in der Welt passieren, zurzeit nicht sonderlich ermutigend. Aber wenn wir tiefer gehen, werden wir feststellen, dass es einige Anzeichen bereits gibt.
You see, in his book called The Human Cycle, Sri Aurobindo gives 5 stages of society's development. First one he calls it as a symbolic stage. The second one is the conventional age. Third one he calls it this individual age. Fourth is the subjective. And fifth is the spiritual. And according to his analysis, human society, more or less, not that every human being, but the human society has come to the individual level and the subjective level. And then he says, we are bound to go towards the spiritual. Now my question is, if we are in the subjective age, what does it mean? Because by subjective age, okay, let me give you a little description. Symbolic age is those early periods of human society in every culture where there was the dominance of religion, of spirituality. And it is the spiritual ideal that had really guided the human society. That was the spiritual age, symbolic age.
Ja, Schlau, Vito hat in seinem Buch Der Zyklus der Menschheit fünf Stufen des, der menschlichen Entwicklung beschrieben oder der Entwicklung der menschlichen Gesellschaft und hat die benannt als einmal die erste Stufe, die symbolische, dann die konventionelle, die individuelle, die subjektive und schließlich die spirituelle Stufe der Entwicklung. Derzeit befinden wir uns auf dem Übergang der individuellen und subjektiven Stufe hin zu einer möglichen spirituellen Ebene. Wir stellen uns nun die Frage, was bedeutet es, nun in diesem subjektiven Zeitalter zu sein? Wie ist dieses subjektive Zeitalter charakterisiert? Ananda hat am Schluss das Beispiel gebracht, dass das symbolische Zeitalter, also das erste Zeitalter, bestimmt war durch die Religion und spirituellen Ideale.
So the second stage, which is the conventional age, he says what was started with a symbolic meaning, later on they become conventions of the society. He gave an example from our own Indian cultural history, especially taking up the case of the caste system. All of you are aware, we have a very dominant caste system in India called the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas and the Shudras, the four levels of castes. But this idea was there right in the beginning of our culture, what we say the Vedic culture. But at that time, it was not a caste that divided society. It was more a symbol of the human endeavor, expression. That is to say, the Brahmin was the intellect. And this is there in every culture, it's not exclusive for India. But Brahmin was those people in the society who pursued intellect, intellectual analysis, intellectual studies. Then the Kshatriya was the warrior. And also every culture has this level of people who are the warrior type. It's not necessarily that you join the army, but there is the warrior type. These are the types. And then the third type, which is called the Vaishya, or this is the businessman, the trader, who creates wealth for the society. And this is also again common. And the fourth one, the Shudra, or the labor, which is again common. And therefore he says, this was more a description of the types of human society. But in the symbolic age, it becomes a convention. It loses its symbolism, it becomes hardened, and it gets divided into four sectors of society. That is the conventional age.
Ananda hat den Übergang von dem symbolischen Zeitalter zum konventionellen Zeitalter beschrieben und das Beispiel des indischen Kastensystems dafür angeführt, indem es vier Kasten gibt, deren Idee ursprünglich in der vedischen Kultur beheimatet sind und die alle das Symbol der menschlichen Anstrengung sozusagen symbolisieren, nämlich den Brahmin, die Anstrengung des Intellekts, der Kshatriya, den des Kriegers, auch so wie wir ihn in allen Gesellschaften finden, den Vaishya, Geschäftsmann oder denjenigen, der der Gesellschaft Reichtum zuführt, und der Shudra, der sozusagen für die Arbeit steht. Ursprünglich waren das einfach nur Typen innerhalb der Gesellschaft, die sich aber vom Übergang vom symbolischen Zeitalter in das konventionelle Zeitalter verhärtet haben und dann erst zu der eigentlichen Teilung führten. Also hier liegt sozusagen der Unterschied zwischen dem symbolischen und dem konventionellen Zeitalter.
So after this conventional age comes the individual age. Now this individual is when you kind of revolt against the convention. That's what we have seen in Europe. When there was a revolt against religion, in India there was again a revolt against caste and all that. So when an individual wakes up and says, no, I will not follow those conventional rules that have come to us for generations and centuries. So this is the individual who emphasizes upon himself and he says, I don't want to follow any conventions. So that was the individualistic age. Now when we say that was, it doesn't mean it isn't. But these are the major signs. After the individual comes the subjective. Subjective means that the whole focus falls upon my own subject, that I become important. Now, this is where the problem begins. What do I mean by I? Which is the me? Which is the I? And that's where I think we'll begin to discuss of today's topic.
Also der Übergang vom konventionellen zum individuellen Zeitalter ist bestimmt durch die Revolte gegenüber Konventionen. Das Individuum beginnt sich selbst zu betonen und in den Vordergrund zu rücken. Und dieses individuelle Zeitalter geht dann über in das subjektive Zeitalter, mit dem Unterschied, dass im subjektiven Zeitalter der ganze Fokus auf dem sogenannten Ich liegt. Und hier beginnen wir eigentlich mit dieser Frage, was ist denn eigentlich dieses Ich, beginnen wir heute Abend den Vortrag.
So, in fact, in his book, he would Schwerwinder refers to German experiment with the subjective age. He says it's Germany who took the leadership to bring in the subjective age to find out something that belongs to my higher nature, what, you know, our Nietzsche called as a superman. So there was a definite attempt by Germany to find out what would be a true subjective age. It in fact pioneered that movement, but unfortunately what it happens to human beings normally, we don't understand who is the true me. Normally I feel it is my ego, or it's my mind, it's my body, it is my feelings, it's my emotions. But actually, the true I is the spiritual individual within. But there it took us time. We first thought I am the external body, body, mind, life, but forgetting the true inner being. So that is where, he says, Germany tried to emphasize the outer man, forgot that there is the inner true being. But that was an experiment that failed, but human beings, human society is going forward to find out the true spiritual I.
Also gerade in Deutschland hat man das Experiment unternommen, in diesem subjektiven Zeitalter die Führung zu übernehmen und nach der höheren Natur dieses Ichs, das eben beschrieben wurde, zu suchen. Und dieser Versuch war leider in Deutschland erfolglos, weil die wahre Bedeutung dieses wahren Ichs in Deutschland nicht verstanden wurde. Denn tatsächlich ist dieses wahre Ich die spirituelle, individuelle, das individuelle Selbst in jedem Einzelnen. Während in Deutschland es so verstanden wurde, wie es auch gewöhnlich verstanden wird, dass das Ich sozusagen eine Komposition, eine Zusammensetzung ist aus dem Körper, dem Mental und den Lebensimpulsen. Und so scheiterte dieses Experiment und dennoch ist die Menschheit weiter auf der Suche.
Now what we are going to study today is exactly this period, the transition from the subjective, the false subjective as we say, to the true subject, which is the spiritual being. So once human beings or humanity transits from the false subjective to the true subjective, then we come to the real spiritual age. But this is easily said. Schwerwinder has given an analysis in the book Human Cycle. But what I want to see is, how is there a transition? What are the symptoms that we see? And if we can find out that, then we will be sure that Schwerwinder's vision is coming true. That's what is my interest.
So, wir untersuchen jetzt den Übergang und die Übergangsphase zwischen diesem falschen Subjektivismus zu einem wahren Subjektivismus, um dann über diesen wahren Subjektivismus zu dem Punkt zu kommen, wo das subjektive Zeitalter in das spirituelle Zeitalter übergeht. Und wir werden versuchen, um die Symptome zu sehen, oder auch in unserer Gesellschaft zu sehen, die uns zeigen sollen, dass die Vision von Sri Aurobindo, dieses spirituellen Zeitalters, eine wahre Vision ist.
So in this analysis, I have read a few authors, you know, nowadays a lot of people are writing about the spirituality, change in human society, change in human ideals. So there is a kind of a wave of change. And here I've taken help of an American author called David Ray Griffith, who has given a very good analysis and symptoms, and which really are very close to what Sri Aurobindo himself talks about in the idea of human unity and the human cycle. So I'm going to base in the beginning a lot of my analysis on this Griffith's analysis and see how he analyzes the present world and the coming spiritual age.
Es gibt einige Autoren, die über diesen Übergang unabhängig von Sri Aurobindo geschrieben wurden. Und einer dieser Autoren ist der amerikanische Schriftsteller David Griffith, der eine sehr gute Analyse dieser Symptome in unserer Zeit verfasst hat. Und ein großer Teil dessen, was man da jetzt sagen wird, kommt zunächst aus dieser Analyse.
So the first thing that we have to understand is, what do we mean by spirituality? You see, when we talk about a spiritualized age or a spiritual society, now let us be clear about the definition of spirituality itself, because that word spirituality is being used in so many different ways. Of course, each one is justified in using the way he or she is doing. But basically, there are kind of three or four divisions. One is based on the religious sentiment. Spirituality, we connect it with religiosity. We say, being religious person, following the church or the temple or the mosque, is still trying to be spiritual. But then some others use it more generally. They say, no, spiritual means something holy, something sacred, something beautiful. But the word holy itself, or something special, something higher, is again a bit, you know, misleading. Because what do I consider holy? For me, something holy could be meditation. But for you, something holy could be doing business. Somebody, the politician, says, my job of being a politician is holy. So the word holy is a bit misleading. So what we could take up in a general sense, is spirituality is something of higher value. A higher value that takes you towards your inner divinity. In Sri Aurobindo, this is the meaning that we've come to. That it is not what is holy, because holy can be anything. But what is important is that holy value taking you towards your inner being? Because we are not talking anymore about the transcendent God. Religion has spoken about the transcendent divinity. But spirituality basically speaks of the divine immanence. That is the basic difference we see. God is no more outside us, which religion said is up in the sky, up in the heavens, up in there. But spirituality would say, no, we have to seek the divine within. So that is a very broad definition. Now, whatever activity you may do, whatever value you may have, you judge for yourself, is it taking you within or is it taking you towards some kind of a power, towards some kind of a satisfaction? You see, I have met people who say, all the sexual indulgence, the vital indulgence, is also spiritual. So you see, you can't stretch spirituality to suit any definition. But just try to have this, is it leading you within or without? That could be the criterion to judge your definition of spirituality.
Wir müssen uns als erstes darüber klar werden, dass wir unter dem Begriff Spiritualität verstehen, weil es ein Wort ist, das derzeit in sehr vielen Bedeutungen verwendet wird. Zum einen die Idee, dass Spiritualität gleichzusetzen ist mit religiösen Gefühlen. Andere setzen Spiritualität gleich mit gewisser irreführenden Heiligkeit. wo man sich viele Fragen stellen müsste, was ist eigentlich für wen wie heilig? Letztlich kann man es allgemeiner definieren, und das ist auch die Definition, wie Sri Aurobindo letztlich formuliert, dass es ein höherer Wert ist, der einen zur inneren Göttlichkeit, also zu dem inneren Göttlichen in sich selber führt. Das ist nicht zu verwechseln mit dem transzendenten Göttlichen. Also der Begriff Spiritualität führt hier tatsächlich auf das innewohnende, ein selbst innewohnende Göttliche hin und hat dann dementsprechend eine relativ weite Definition, so dass man ja daran messen kann oder für sich selber messen kann, ob Dinge spirituell oder nicht spirituell sind, daran, ob sie einem helfen, nach innen zu gehen oder einen nach innen führen oder ob sie einen woanders hinführen, in irgendeinen äußeren Bereich oder in eine andere Ablenkung.
Now, once we have clarified that, we'll come back to this notion toward the end of our talk. Now, if we analyze the subjective movement. Now, it's a very common thing that the present society speaks of two things basically, or many more, but fundamentally what we see is individualism. That everywhere each one says it's my right. This is what is given to me as my right. So we have an emphasis on each one becoming an individual per se. Now that individualism, from where did it come? You see, all the centuries, society was based more on the collectivity, where the individual was only a part of the collective. But now in the present generations we see what we say the modern times. What is the basic idea of this modern times is the individualism. Now philosophically, there is a root cause for this concept. You see, we have to dig a little deeper and see suddenly why is everyone talking about individuality or individualism. Individualism coupled with freedom. So these are the slogans of our modern society. But how is this individualism to be looked upon from the philosophical angle? Now one thing is, philosophers analyze about the divine reality, that God, the divine, is one. So he is an individual. So his creatures, what have been created by the divine, we are also individuals. So you see, there is a truth in this. But then we will see later, when I say God is an individual, I am an individual, are these two individualities similar? No, obviously not. But we have yet to understand that. So that's philosophically we compare the analogy with the divine. And then as science increased, there was the analogy of the atom, what we say atomic individuality. We said even in nature, the nature began with atomic individuality. There were first the atoms which combined and then which became the society of molecules and all that. So we got psychologically, philosophically, this concept of individuality either from religion or from science.
Also wenn wir diese subjektive Bewegung jetzt analysieren, dann ist wahrscheinlich das Zentrum das, dass man sagen kann, dass sich in dieser modernen Zeiten der Begriff Individualismus am stärksten hervorgetan hat. Diese modernen Zeiten trägt vor dem Hintergrund dieses Ausspruchs, das ist mein Recht. Es gibt dazu, dass das so geschehen ist, gibt es psychologische Gründe. Das gibt auch ein psychologisches Dach. Und zwar ein psychologisches Dach aus zwei Richtungen. Zum einen ist es eine gewisse Analogie zur göttlichen Realität, die besagt, also Gott ist eins, also er, Gott ist ein Individuum. Und daraus die Schlussfolgerung, also alle seine Geschöpfe, also auch wir sind ebenfalls Individuen. Das hat eine gewisse Wahrheit in sich, die wir aber später nochmal näher betrachten müssen. Die andere Analogie ist eine wissenschaftliche Analogie, in der man sagt, also die kleinste Einheit der Wissenschaft sind Atome, und auch diese Atome wirken eigentlich in sich als Individuen und haben im Prinzip keine Verbindung zu anderen. Auch daher wurde sozusagen der Begriff psychologisch der Individualität in unserem Zeitalter gestärkt.
And on the social level we see, especially in the Western world, a society or a community is an aggregate of three individuals. We have come together for a specific purpose. You join a particular company, you go to a particular place, you go to a particular department. You are just a few aggregates there. Afterwards, you may change your department, your business, then you go to another group. So it is a three individuals for coming together. There's nothing called a social law. It is more the three individuals. So this has been tremendously emphasized here. But back home in India, I'm afraid our society is still not ready for this free individuals coming in. For us, society is still a heavy burden. A community is still a very binding thing. I mean, nowadays our youngsters and people are trying to become free individuals. But I'm afraid the reality in India, and I would say most of these eastern countries, I was there in Bangkok for 3 years, and I know the society there too. So the community there, the society there, is much more powerful than the individuals. So whatever we do, it is that we have to look at the society. We have to look at the community. What will the community tell me? Will the community agree with what I am doing? I mean, you see, take for example the simplest thing of dressing. I mean, in Europe you have fashions, you can do what you want. But immediately back home, our girls and our boys, although they see the movies and the influence of the pictures and all that from the West, they will not get to that kind of a freedom because there are social restrictions, there are parental restrictions, there's a kind of a community which says, hey, don't do like that. This is not accepted in our society. What we call, you know, some people call it moral policing. But this moral policing has come into India, but there is a strong impact of society even now. So there is, when I come to the West and when I go back home, or when I come from India to the West, I see this is one of the major differences. Here there are three individuals, but in India and in Far East, if the society is more important than the individuals.
Auf der sozialen Ebene ist es so, dass im Westen das freie Individuum oder auf dem freien Individuum erheblich größere Betonung liegt als auf der Gesellschaft. Im Gegensatz, wie Ananda eben ausführte, wie es in Indien ist. So hier ist es im Prinzip so, dass freie Individuen zusammenkommen, dass die eigentlich nicht wirklich den bindenden sozialen Gesetzen unterliegen, während es in Indien und in großen Teilen der östlichen Welt noch so ist, dass die also Gesellschaft also doch in erster Linie noch das Verhalten des Einzelnen bestimmt und nicht wie bei uns umgekehrt. Und dann hat er so ein Beispiel der Kleidung erläutert, wo es ganz deutlich wird, dass obwohl es auch viele Veränderungen in Indien gibt, auch im asiatischen Raum letztlich, dann doch immer noch die Normen der Gesellschaft, die Normen der Familie durchsetzen.
Now, this is what we have seen about individualism and the difference between East and West. Now we come to the second point of this modern civilization, what he calls the dualism. Now this started long back with Descartes, the dualism, the dichotomy, the difference between body and mind. But that, you see, has trickled down to the society. And there I say, me as a human being, I'm quite different from others. You see, try to analyze this philosophically. It's not just the body and mind are separate. That has come to the level, I say, I'm completely separate from you. I'm completely separate from nature. I'm not connected with anyone. So that complete segregation was necessary because of the idea of freedom. If I want absolute freedom, I don't want to be bound to anybody. So that really led me to say, I'm different from nature, I'm different from society, I'm different from these people. So this separation was good in a way to bring in that ultimate sense of freedom. But then what? It has had its bad impact also. That is especially on nature. When we did not consider nature as part of ourselves, or we as part of nature, then this dominance over nature, destruction of nature, utilization of nature for my needs, for my greed, for my satisfaction. So you see, what I'm trying to analyze is to give you the idea of the false subjective. Is after that, we will go to the true subjective, which is the spiritual. So let us see what are the false subjective ideas which have really led us till the modern times.
Das zweite Merkmal dieser modernen Zeiten, dieses subjektiven Zeitalters, ist der Dualismus, der philosophisch schon von Descartes herrührt, der Körper vom Geist, von Mental trennte, und der inzwischen aber auch psychologisch den Effekt hatte, vor allem auch bei uns im Westen, dass der Mensch sich als vollständig unterschiedlich und vor allem auch getrennt von dem Rest der Schöpfung betrachtet. Das ist eine Annahme, die zunächst mal auch für die menschliche Entwicklung absolut notwendig war, um in das Gefühl des absoluten und ultimativen Friedens zu kommen. Hat aber seine negativen Effekte. Wenn man sich selbst wenn sich der Mensch selbst aus von der Natur und von der Schöpfung getrennt betrachtet, dann führt es zu den Phänomenen, die wir bald kennen, dass wir die Natur letztlich unterdrücken und kontrollieren auf eine Weise, die nicht in Harmonie ist. Und das sind alles Merkmale dieses falschen Subjektivismus, den wir jetzt kurz beleuchtet haben und wo wir später sehen werden, wie er sich vom wahren Subjektivismus unterscheidet.
Now, once we have seen this destruction of nature, there's another wrong idea that came in. What we call here the deism. One was the dualism, when I'm separate from nature and everybody. We go further in the thought and bring in the question of deism. Now, deism here, what we mean by the author also tells us, is that you see in the beginning of spirituality or the spiritual religions, we always considered God as transcendent and immanent. I mean, you get back to the Greek philosophy or the Chinese philosophy or the Vedic philosophy or the Egyptian. There was always a sense of the divine up, the transcendent, and the divine in the world. These are both were accepted. You know, especially when we look at the pantheism, we saw sun as a god, the moon as a god, or the winds as a god. So there was a kind of a divinity around and divinity above. That is what was dominated the human consciousness. But when the modern times came in, with the coming of the Protestantism, this division came, the god is up above there, and we did not see the divine around in the world. That was a major shift in our modern thinking. That when we separated the divine from the earth, from the world, and this was necessary because religions wanted to really capture the human society, human mind. And so for them, if you say God is only up in heaven and after death you reach there, then we all follow religion because we are afraid of what will happen after death. So this division was done consciously by all religions, good or bad, because that is how they could control the human society under them. This division brought in, or what we say, you know, this question of God is not here, is only up there. And here my entire experience is based on my senses. So you see psychologically how we are moving away from spirituality. So when I said here this world belongs to my senses and all knowledge and experience comes through my senses, And God cannot come through senses. Therefore, God is not in this world. God is only up there. You see, it's a very, very important movement. We may not really understand its impact. But this is how slowly the society has gone away from the immanent divine. And may I add here one word? This is again a great difference that comes in India, because fortunately I move between East and West, and I've seen this deism that came in the West made the church very strong and made the scientific temperament very predominant, saying this world is only a world of senses, God is not here. Ultimately, we had the book called God is Dead. But in India, it did not happen. For us, God is not only transcendent, He is not only immanent, but He is also around. In fact, this is the fundamental Vedantic thought. If you want to understand the basic central notion of Vedanta, these are the three ideas: that the divine is one, God is one, He is transcendent. But also He is universal. He is there around. Because we have the famous formula when we say Brahman is in all and all is in Brahman and Brahman is all. You see, this is the triple formula that we have, that the divine is all and all is in the divine and the divine is in the all. So what happens? You can see this extraordinary experience for the Vedic rishis. Because we did not think that this world is a creation of God, like the Bible and other books would tell us, scriptures would tell us, that God created the world. We in our Vedanta, we do not say God created the world. God became the world. God manifested the world. So everything in this world is the divine essentially. When I say I created, like a woman who creates a baby out of a womb, she brings it out of her womb and says, you are there, I am here. There is a sense of separation in creation. But in India, this Vedantic concept, there is no creation. It is only becoming. So the divine has become matter. So there is no difference between matter and spirit. There are only differences of levels. Otherwise, essentially consciousness is the same. So coming back to the Vedantic formula, the divine is one, transcendent. He is there, universal in this entire world. And thirdly, He is within each one of the human beings. And therefore, we can reach the divine in any way, in every way, each one having his or her own freedom. You see, I'm giving you this thought to contrast between the Western religion and Eastern religion. We had this great freedom of religion. As many paths, so many people, says Sri Ramakrishna. So we never had one religion, one path. Although we call it Hinduism, Hinduism has no one path. It doesn't have one scripture. It doesn't have one God. It doesn't have one avatar. There are multiple things. So this is the basic essence of Hinduism, which differs completely from this Western religion.
Das dritte Merkmal dieses subjektiven Zeitalters ist eine besondere Form des Deismus, der sich hier im Westen entwickelt hat. Also noch früher, auch in den alten Traditionen, wurde die göttliche Realität sowohl als transzendent als auch als innewohnend betrachtet. Und mit dem Auftreten des modernen Protestantismus bewegte man sich von dieser göttlichen Immanenz, von diesem Innenwohnen weg und kam letztlich zu einer Haltung, in der man Gott und die Welt trennte, sozusagen, dass man sagen konnte oder dass man sagen musste, Gott gibt es nur außerhalb der Welt. Das führte letztlich wiederum zu der Doktrin, dass alles, alle wirkliche Erfahrung auf den Sinne basiert, das wiederum zu den wissenschaftlichen, zur wissenschaftlichen grundlegenden Haltung führte. Das war auch notwendig in der Zeit, weil die Religion durch dieses Dogma so stark wurde, dass die Befürchtung stand, dass das gesamte Mentalnahme und die Gegenbewegung sozusagen durch die Wissenschaft auch sozusagen hervorbringen musste. Das ist ein Weg, der sich entscheidend von dem der Welt und der Indiens unterscheidet, weil dort sozusagen die vedantische Tradition sich in dem Sinne auch gehalten und unbeeinflusst fortgesetzt hat, indem diese Tradition, also Gott, nur als transzendent, auch als immanent, aber vor allem auch als sozusagen umgeben, als universal annimmt. Und hier das mit dem Ergebnis, dass letztlich jeder das Göttliche auf seine Weise, das was man letztlich überall entdecken kann, und es dementsprechend in Indien nie zu einer bestimmten Religionsform kam, sondern eigentlich tatsächlich nur zu einer Suche nach dem Göttlichen in allen oder in sich selbst.
You see, you can see there's a tracing of this whole idea. Once we divided the divine and said he is only transcendent and not in the world, obviously the next development was the concept of secularism, which had nothing to do with the religion in our so-called day-to-day living. Religion is in the church and we are away from church. So our businesses, our education, our politics, our everything should not have any interference of religion. So the major idea of secularism came in. And that was obviously something that the West really enjoys, is proud of, that we are a secular nation.
Wie es in diesem Zeitalter geschah, dann mündet es automatisch in der Haltung des Säkularismus, wie man sozusagen jegliches eigenes Handeln von der Religion an sich trennt und sich daraus irgendwie eine neue Doktrin entwickelt hat.
Yes, true. Secularism has had its impact, its utility. When it divided religion and the state, we have the whole history behind, I don't know how to get into that. But then, what happens? The concept that the divine is not in the world becomes deeper. The God is relegated only to church and temple and to mosque. So the rest of the time we are left to do what we want, so that the divine is not able to reach me, has no control over me when I am in my office, when I go to church only. He has the control, he has the authority to say something. So this kind of a secular attitude was good for human beings, because science could develop independently, economics could develop independently, politics could develop independently. But ultimately, in the final analysis of spirituality, we are away from God. But again, I will tell you one more thing. This secularism, which is predominantly there in the West and in the US I've seen, is not there in India. Although our politicians speak of a secular state and secularism, I must say it is all a borrowed idea from America especially. But if you come to our Indian community, Indian day-to-day living, the poor and middle-class people, in fact, every hour, right from the time we wake up to the time we sleep, is full of the touch of God. We have not been able to separate God from our life. It's not that we are all spiritual and moral and yogis, not at all. There is all the corruption, everything is there. But still what I mean is, this kind of a mental division between the divine and the non-divine is not there. You see, I mean, next time when you come to India, try to observe the simple acts that the common man does. For example, when an automan or the taxi, you take a taxi from Madras airport to come to Pondicherry, you must see when he sits in the taxi, he does first a pranam. There's always a deity, somebody there in the car, picture of a god. First he will do a pranam. So the moment he gets into the taxi, he thinks of the divine and says, "Oh God, protect me," and he does a pranam. In the morning, when a shop is open, he will not open the lock just like that and open the lock and get in. He stops for a while, thinks of the divine, and then you open the shop. It may be, you may say it is meant for personal profit, but it doesn't matter. At least he says, "Oh divine, oh God, may I have a good day, may I have a profitable day," but he is thinking of the divine. I mean, this is so much common, not only starting the work, in the work, during the work, there are always these periods. And of course, if you know a little deeper our Indian society, we have, you know, what we say, child's 21st day. 21st day is when we name the child. Of course, in Europe and America, it's a different system. But we don't name the children in our hospitals. They come after the 21st day, there is a ceremony. All the relatives are invited. And on that day, somebody in the family, it is not necessarily parents, it could be an uncle or a grandfather or a grandmother or somebody who first gives the name. And that name is first whispered in the ear of the child. So that is, you know, in ancient systems, it used to be first that thou art Brahman. The first word that used to be whispered into the ear of the child is that you are Brahman. And then given the name. So you see, right from the birth, there is a kind of a connection with the divine. Even prior to birth, I mean, I don't know your name, but you are living in Oroville. You must have seen some things. You see, when the lady gets pregnant, there is again a ceremony. It's not the question of ceremony for the sake of ceremony. But again, with this concept that the new soul is coming into the womb of the lady, and may this soul be guided, be going towards the divine. So we have a ceremony, we have a puja, and the pregnant lady is again put in the center and done a great puja in the name of offering this new child to the divine. Yeah, I think I've talked too much.
Also auch der Säkularismus hatte seine wesentliche Bedeutung, ist auch indem er so eine Religion von dem Staat trennte und damit auch die Möglichkeit gab, bestimmte Dinge, Wissenschaft, Wirtschaft, eben auch der Staat unabhängig von der Religion entwickeln konnte. Das dann aber letztlich geschah, und das schließlich auch die logische Folge davon ist, dass man als Einzelner im Grunde zu der Entwicklung kommt, dass das Wirkliche eben weit weg ist und letztlich auch keine Kontrolle über einen hat und letztlich auch keine Verbindung zu einem hat. Und da hatte Alain noch betont, dass das in Indien eben das einer der großen Unterschiede zwischen dem Westen und Indien ist. Und das tägliche Leben in jedem Moment durch die Berührung mit dem Wirklichen bestimmt ist, weil dort das Wirkliche eben in der Empfindung vom Leben getrennt ist. Eine Trennung zwischen dem Göttlichen und dem Nicht-Göttlichen, wie es im Westen eigentlich fast schon immanent ist, gibt es in Indien nicht. Er hat also zwei Beispiele angeführt von Zeremonie. Einmal die Zeremonie der Namensgebung, die man schon dem Kind sozusagen durch die Namensgebung ins Ohr flüstert. Du bist Brahman, also du bist das Göttliche. Und das eben auch schon vor der Geburt ständig, also diese Gegenwart, die Vermittlung der Gegenwart des immanenten Göttlichen vorhanden ist.
Well, from this notion of secularism, all that has happened, obviously the next step that we have landed in is materialism. You see, it's a gradual process how everything is going away from the divine, and then we land up in materialism, where the whole concentration is on kind of a scientific spirit, on a kind of determinism, on my focus purely on matter. You see, we have now started with the Vedas, the symbolic age, and we come down slowly through the ages, and we see ultimately we have ended in materialism, where God is not spoken about at all. So that's where we have landed in. We will see the other side also, but this is the line of thinking that has come down.
Der nächste Schritt aus dem Säkularismus heraus ist im Prinzip folgerichtig der Schritt in den Materialismus. Wir hatten mit dem symbolischen Zeitalter begonnen und wir haben jetzt den Faden ein bisschen verfolgt und sehen jetzt, dass wir dann eigentlich durch das immer weitere Entfernen von Gott ganz natürlich in den Materialismus landen und in einer Haltung, wo Gott eigentlich gar kein Begriff mehr ist und keinen Raum mehr hat als Wort.
Now, once we become materialistic, now psychologically, what is the impact? That we all become self-interested. That means how much I can gain, how much can I profit, how I can make my life enjoyable at the cost of the others. So you see, we have come down psychologically, spiritually, to become a small being who is interested only in oneself, one's comfort, one's posterity, one's future. Nothing to do with the world, nothing to do with society, and that is kind of the rock bottom we have reached in the modern society. And this has brought in what we say, you know, the unpardonable social Darwinism, might is right, where we fight with each other, competition, you know, there's all the immorality, all the killings, all the violence. There's no question of, you know, the other person. Benefit of the other. It is the mighty's right, what we named as the social Darwinism. And this has led now finally to what we see around the world in this violence, in this terrorism and all that. So I would say that the world is what it is not because of a few people called Taliban or Afghanistan or terrorists or anti-LDT. There is a kind of a deterioration of the human individual himself or herself. Because let us not, well, we'll analyze this later, but at this point let me say that it is easy to blame that they are terrorists, but is also see within yourself, are we not ourselves these deeply materialistic, self-interested people whose consciousness has shrunk so small that we can't think of the other's benefit. So there's a kind of a degradation of the human consciousness itself. So out of this degradation, obviously, the worst has come out.
Also die psychologische Folge des Materialismus ist letztlich die reine Selbstbezogenheit. Die Frage, die sich eigentlich davon noch stellt, wie kann ich davon profitieren, selbst auf Kosten der Gesellschaft und selbst auf Kosten der anderen. Und für sie ist das der Boden, den wir zurzeit erreicht haben und der sich im Sozialdarwinismus, in Gewalt, im Terrorismus, in den verschiedenen Formen von Ich-Bezogenheit widerspiegelt. Man könnte eigentlich sagen, dass die Welt nicht das ist, was sie ist, weil es Terroristen gibt und weil es Gewalt gibt, sondern letztlich, weil es zu einer Verschlechterung oder zu einer Verringerung des menschlichen Individuums gekommen ist, indem er sozusagen nur noch in seiner eigenen Kleinheit auf sich selbst beschränkt bleibt und sozusagen fast schon eine Herabwürdigung des menschlichen Bewusstseins findet.
Now this is the line of thinking and the downfall of human consciousness. But now what Sri Aurobindo envisaged as a spiritual age. He also mentions that it will not come overnight, obviously. There's got to be some progression right from this downmost point. There's a kind of a revival of the human consciousness. And in this revival, he would say there is already from the beginning of 19th century, there is an awakening to a higher consciousness in some avant-garde people, in some individuals, in some communities, in some societies. There's a change of consciousness, there's a change of a different concept. And that is what we see, the birth of the spiritual age.
Wir haben jetzt mit dieser Linie tatsächlich den untersten Punkt des menschlichen Bewusstseins erreicht. Und gerade von dort wird es also wieder zu diesem Wiederaufstieg kommen und dem Wiederaufstieg geben. Schwabindo hat es so formuliert und erkannt es bereits am Anfang des 19. Jahrhunderts, dass in einigen Individuen oder seit Anfang des 19. Jahrhunderts in einigen Individuen und auch in einigen kleineren Gruppen sozusagen ein Erwachen gab, hin zu einem neuen und zu einer Geburt des spirituellen Zeitalters.
You see, now let's go back to the first idea that we gave. Now, the question of the individualism that modern society has. But now, how is this slowly changing? Now, you may call it the green movement, or you may call it the spiritual movement, you may call it the new age movement, doesn't matter what name we give. But slowly through all these movements, what is it we see? Ecology and environment and all these topics that are coming up. You see, one major change in the definition of the individual. Now, this is what is extremely important, and that's what we call the spiritual thing. That the individual is no more the I. What we say here, that there are, everything is inclusive. That I cannot be an island to myself anymore. You see, this is a conceptual change that is coming, and this is basically the spiritual change. Because in spirituality, the concept is that there's no individual. There's nobody cut off. Actually, there is one consciousness of the divine, and we are all mirrors of the same consciousness. So to think that I'm separate from you is wrong, is a falsehood, is a fallacy. So fortunately, you see, we don't have to teach spirituality to the society. But somewhere, even with this, you know, environment or the Greenpeace, where it says nature is part of me, I am part of nature. So this concept where the individual has enlarged himself, saying that the society is within me and I am part of society, nature is within me and I am part of nature, the world is with me and I am part of the world. And here technology has helped quite a bit, with all your internets and websites and all that, where we have become very close to each other. So today when I sit at the computer, I'm not just myself, Mr. Reddy. I see a whole lot of connections that are, you know, interdependent. So this question of the individual has suddenly enlarged. I would not say all, but what I'm saying is that there are already symptoms of a change. The first change is, the definition of individual has begun to be not exclusive, but all inclusive. Then the question of my family, well, is still there. My family means my husband, my wife, and my children, my parents. But it's not even stopping there. You see, spiritual communities which are there around the world growing. Just today I was speaking to Isa, and she was telling us how even in Germany there are these families of spiritual seekers who are trying to come together. So what happens is more or less, more and more the community, small communities, we have a fantastic example in Oroville, it is these communities which are now gaining ground. And so it's not a family of my blood relation. Now the future family is of this ideal, of the path, those who follow the path, they become my family. You see, I may have my entire family at Hyderabad, so-called blood relations. But that's not my family. But my family is wherever there is the seekers of this new spirituality that is given by Sri Aurobindo. So that's why I intermingle more with this family than my so-called biological family of my sisters and cousins and all that. So this is what is going to be the future, and we have already these symptoms happening. So the first change is the definition of the individual and the definition of family.
Die erste entscheidende Veränderung, die wir jetzt in unserer Gesellschaft oder in diesem Zeitalter sehen, ist, dass sich der Begriff, die Definition des Begriffs Individuums wieder verändert hat. Und zwar weg von der materialistischen Einstellung des Individuums, das Individuum bin ich, groß geschrieben, und auch ich bin sozusagen eine Insel und nicht mehr weder mit Gott noch mit der Welt oder mit anderen verbunden, sondern dass diese Vielzahl von Bewegungen, ob man sie New Age nennt, ob man sie eine Umweltbewegung nennt oder andere, das Gefühl aufgekommen ist, dass man Teil eines, wieder Teil der Natur ist, Teil eines Größeren und ungefähr ja, dem spirituellen Ideal entsprechend, dass man sagt, ich bin Teil der Natur, die Natur ist ein Teil von mir, ohne dass man jetzt allen Leuten Spiritualität lehren müsste. Die Technologie unterstützt das derzeit sehr stark, wenn man sieht, dass man mit einer E-Mail oder in Forums plötzlich uns alle Leute nah sind, man mit jedem vernetzt ist. Also das Entscheidende in diesem Zeitalter, die entscheidende Veränderung ist, dass das Individuum alles wieder umfasst. Und zwar nicht nur wie früher, die Kollektivität, die Familie und eine gewisse Form von Community, sondern tatsächlich allumfassend ist. Und dass die neue Familie eben die ist, die Familie, die die gleichen Ideale in sich trägt.
So obviously now you see the next move from this change of definition. It's not even a definition, a lot of people are following this new definition of the individual. Now from here we are moving towards a kind of a collectivism. And this we see in Sri Aurobindo, in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, we are going to talk about that on Sunday. Now this phase is becoming very active, where this question of the collectivism, when it begins to dominate the human consciousness, the one most important thing that would come into is that we'll stop the destruction of nature and other species. Because then what happens, what in the Vedas and Upanishads we have spoken about, Vasudeva Kutumbakam, that is one family of Vasudeva or the Divine. So that was an ancient ideal we were given in the Upanishads itself. But now slowly we are moving towards that. That when I say it's not human family, family of other species, of animals, of trees, of insects, of birds, the whole nature. So this is what we call Vasudeva Kutumbakam, that is the family of the Divine. And this notion, if it increases, or it is increasing already, that is what in Sri Aurobindo's terms we call as the collective consciousness.